I'm David Dobkin. I'm the director of Shanghai Nights, and I'm going to talk to you about the film. I think the first thing that is important to talk about is the making of a sequel and how I ended up making this film. I was a big fan of the first film. In fact, it was something that had passed in front of me and I was unavailable to do. And a director that I shared an office with at Ridley Scott's commercial company ended up doing, Tom Dye, and did a great job on the film. And when this film came around and Tom was unavailable, it was something that I jumped on to do. I think the challenge when you're making a sequel is to try to always make it better, and everyone says bigger, but you want to make it more emotional if you can, you want to make it more funny, you want to bring the action to another level. And those are all things that we all really focused on in this film quite intently, trying to raise it up that next notch. And I think, and hopefully you think, we did a pretty good job. The first draft of this screenplay was extraordinary. Al Goff and Miles Miller really captured the voices of the characters in a really fun and dynamic way, and immediately brought to mind movies like Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein or Young Frankenstein. And there was also this opportunity to bring, because they're going to London, this anachronistic element with British rock and roll to it. And it overall just was a great project. Now, this opening little title sequence was something that was conceived very simply to start with that match light and start very small with a very intimate detail. And slowly this shot came to mind, opening up to reveal the Forbidden City. So you go from this very, very small detailed moment to these big steps out very quickly to see where we're at. The design of the film, which is by Alan Cameron, we decided to take, as you could tell in that shot of the Forbidden City, I don't know how realistic that may look to the audience, we chose to have a very stylized approach towards all the design in the movie so that it would feel like a fairy tale of sorts. It would really feel like it was real, but it was better than real. It was embellished, so it would be as in something you would have read or seen in your imagination in an old-time movie. The wipes were another choice. That's a wipe right there. The transition between the scenes, the choice to use wipes whenever possible was another part of telling that kind of page-turning style, bringing that style to the picture. One of the things that happened in this film was Al and Miles, not only did they create a great canvas to paint the picture on visually, but they deepened the emotional landscape of the picture also by creating a very emotional journey between Jackie's character and his father. And as you see right there, there's a conflict between them where you'll learn more about later in the picture, but that really becomes the core story of the film. This sequence, shot for shot, came to mind very specifically to keep everything very mysterious and very off-screen. You kind of think you're seeing what's going on, but you're not sure, and to let your imagination really bring you into the picture, especially to introduce the main bad guy of the movie, Lord Rathbone, who is this silhouetted figure you see walking down the hallway, walks into the light, very classical old movie style reveal. Kim Chan, the actor here, probably seen him in a dozen other movies, brought a certain something to the role that I felt was really interesting. We wanted the father to feel like he could very easily be Jackie's father, that he has a certain stoicism and very cultural feel to him. But at the same time, we wanted you to really like him, because the whole movie is about him living up to his father's expectations. This is the first fight sequence of the film, obviously. Very well choreographed by Jackie, and even though he's not in the scene, he worked on it with me. I love that moment story-wise, that it's the daughter's cry that distracts the father, and Rathbone's looking for it and seizes the opportunity to take advantage of the father and kill him, basically. He wants me to send his Aidan Gillen plays Rathbone. All the actors in the movie, we really, really cast for a long time to find the right people. It was really, really hard to get exactly the right people for what I wanted, and every single main character took a long, long time to cast. Fan Wong, the actress here, who's a really amazing actress, she had great acting ability. She was beautiful. She was able to do some of her own movement work, her physical work, and she also just had a certain depth and softness to her that would contrast against her fighting style. Something else that you'll see later on is that Fan's fighting style, or I should say Lin, in the movie, her fighting style is very different from John Wang's, Jackie's character. We wanted to create her style as more of these movements that are more graceful and round and circular, almost like a Tai Chi movement, whereas Jackie's are more of a boxing fight style. Classic Jackie Chan. The puzzle box right there was something that actually Jackie came up with as an idea when we first talked about the movie together. The story about him and the father and him having gone to America was always there, and the father feeling that he had abandoned the family. There wasn't anything to pass that along aside from the actual act of avenging his father in the film, and Jackie told me about these puzzle boxes that they have where you have to figure out the puzzle in order to open them, and that there could be a message inside. From there, I brought that to Alan Miles and the writers, and we expanded it into something that would go throughout the entire movie with kind of new age metaphor of, you know, the box will open when you're ready to hear the message inside. And indeed it ended up working great, because you had something that was a physical icon for you to follow throughout the movie that represented the conflict between Jackie and his father.
Don't you worry, Roy is about to save him from becoming a human sacrifice.
Those stories are all lies.
No, see? It says right here on the back. Author Sage McAllister bases all his stories on first-hand accounts.
It was a lot of fun going back to Calgary. This is where they shot Shanghai Noon. We went right back to the same place. And here we pick up the story. And you can hear the music is by Randy Edelman. He did a great job. He scored the first film, so we were able to bring back a lot of the same themes and expand them.
Sorry, Sheriff. No princess.
Jackie's still pining for the princess from the first movie. It was a challenge to try to decide how much of the first film we had to address in this movie and how much we could let go, because obviously a new audience isn't going to know all this information. In fact, there's a lot of jokes that go on regarding the first film. And I think we ended up with a good balance. Gets the puzzle box and he realizes his father has passed away. Shot this in Calgary. That is actually Jackie up there. Minutes before, we had to helicopter him down because a huge storm came in. We actually only got to shoot that shot twice. And thank God one of them worked for the film. That first image of him up there was something that Alan Miles had written into the script, and it just really stuck with me. It was very emotional and very strong. And at one point, you know, when we were making hard decisions as to what to keep and lose in the script what we could afford to. It just, that really stuck with everybody and we went for it. Now, something else I want to kind of talk about is the tone of the movie and how the movie, because of the fact that Jackie's journey is so much more emotional now that you have this thing about his father being killed, how do you move that character between comedy and the stakes of the film? And this is something that we really worked hard on. And Jackie and I were always looking at each other going, well, is it okay? We were just on the mountaintop, and now we come out and the horse is sitting down like a dog. And ultimately the decision was to go moment for moment and let the edit of the movie work it, and it ended up working out great that way.
So I send the Shanghai kid and the princess out the back.
Here we meet Roy O'Bannon, Owen Wilson's character.
He forgot to thank him for saving his life.
And I love it because the very first thing he's doing is completely lying through his teeth and rearranging his revisionist history of what happened in the first film to be an opportunist and use everything to his own advantage.
And not a single bullet touched me.
No. What happened to the Emperor's gold?
Well, we divided it up. I insisted on giving my share to the Indians, of course.
It's always hard not to stop and listen to Owen Wilson.
Please don't ever call those noble people savages. If being proud of your body and wanting to ride around naked all day makes you a savage, then by
now, we started shooting these scenes. We had 10 weeks of night photography pretty much straight in the movie. We started the whole movie off with a week on a stage, and then we went right into 8 weeks straight of night photography, and then we had another 2 weeks later on. That's an extraordinarily long time to be working on a movie and not seeing, basically, sunlight. When everyone else is going to bed, you're waking up, and vice versa. Owen and Jackie and the whole cast did an amazing job of really selling their energy levels and, you know, keeping the comedy great. I love this moment when they first meet again.
Say that again?
Reach for the sky, Roy.
John Wayne!
You remember the whole John Wayne thing.
Look at you!
Look at you!
What brings you to New York?
My share of the gold.
And, you know, Roy's ability to run a line of BS.
Okay, now that gold is in what the Wall Street pros call a long-term investment. We can't touch it right now because it's building.
I need it tonight.
You just got here. Let's celebrate a little bit. Hey.
No, I don't have time.
You just got to the big city.
My father's been killed.
John, you need the money to get back for the funeral?
No, I must go to England. The ship leaves tonight.
Wait, your father died in England?
China. My sister followed the murderer to London.
Wait, murder? Which is, I'm a little bit mixed up. Let me see if I can get the facts straight. You have a sister? You never told me you had a sister. Is she pretty or does she look like you, John? Be honest.
Roy, I need my money.
I don't like that tone of voice. You think after all we've been through, I'd stiff you? In case you had noticed, I'm doing pretty well for myself.
Yeah.
Sorry, Roy.
That's okay. Going through a really tough time right now. You gotta be more trusting of people, okay? Look at me.
This was a very fun joke that was in the script that was brilliant with him turning out to be a waiter. And it was just very simple. You know, don't show anyone else in the white jacket until the moment you cut to Owen in the same jacket and get up as these guys.
You could have tips.
Great reaction.
Craziest thing, I guess. I guess because I come in here so much, they're mistaking me for a waiter. It's embarrassing.
Again, like, such a great world to watch these guys acting in, all of a sudden being thrown into this, like, high society, ritzy thing.
Zeppelin. I need my money now!
So here, originally in that spot, Owen says Zeppelin, and Jackie makes a face, and he describes the Zeppelin journey to Jackie, and when he says, where's the rest of the money, we would cut to three visual sequences a la Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid photographs where you start on a wide of the photograph and you would zoom in and see that Owen was in the photograph or vice versa. And the three of them were Owen at the racetrack losing all his money, Owen launching the O'Bannon Follies, which was a bunch of burlesque showgirls where he's up on stage with all these dance girls, and him obviously with the Zeppelin and the investors thinking he had hit the big time money.
Just sleep with her.
course she does. I told her the Great Wall ain't the only big thing coming out of China.
Why did you say that?
So you could get the money.
I would not sleep with women for money.
Why? I'm going to sleep with her for money. John, just go in there and do your business and think about your sister in England.
What?
Roy!
Duty calls.
Roy!
I love how this set looks. It's just a beautiful set. It came out really great. We actually built that revolving door into the lobby of an existing shutdown hotel in Prague, which is where we shot the movie.
Floor.
Something that I'll talk more about as the movie goes on, and you'll see it more clearly in England when they end up there, is this whole color theory approach that I like to have, where I create icons out of the characters by setting specific colors against them and controlling the palette of the locations so that they really pop out, and it becomes very simple to follow each character and who they are throughout the scenes. You'll see Owen becomes blue, Jackie becomes green, Fan Wong's character is in red, Rathbone's in black, and so on and so on.
John, come on. You gotta trust me on this one. Okay, look, I'm kind of in a transitional phase in my life.
This is a great scene. This scene almost got omitted from the film because it was very easy to cut from them running out of the room to them coming around down in the lobby. But I felt it was really, really important for you to spend a moment with Roy and Jackie alone and create some sympathy for Roy. I think it really paid off in the movie and changed the way everything after it worked.
You were always my compass, John. The plan. You asked me the right questions. The plan? The plan, I think, is to find the right woman, raise a lot of children, and teach them values.
No, Roy. The plan to get out of here.
Okay, the plan.
Now, this was a great added moment that we threw in that wasn't originally scripted, but we put it together. This making up of the names is an Owen Wilsonism here, a little creation. I believe the story was Smokey Desperado was something that one of the producers on the film, John Glickman, and Owen were at a party together, and there was a bean dip called smoky bean dip, and Owen decided that he wanted Roy to try to hide his name as Smokey Desperado in the movie. And when we're shooting, this is where it ended up being. Now here we're building into Jackie's first fight. And obviously with the cops and the revolving door, brilliant idea by Alan Miles, I might add. It was too hard to resist the whole Keystone Cop theme of music and style. We temped with it, which means we temporarily put music to it while we were doing the first edit of the movie, and it just stuck. It stuck so well that we had to stick with it. It was a great fight. Almost like an anti-fight. If you listen, the sound design here is fantastic. We decided to go with a lot of cartoon-type sounds for this stuff to make it more fun. Everything is accented and embellished with cartoon sounds. Listen to the hat. That kind of stuff. Really cool. Tim Chow did the sound design on this film. Does a lot of Jackie's movies, if not all the American films that have been made, practically. Did a great job.
You, I found our ticket out of here. We're on our way.
Now here they are, making their way to London. And Roy has cooked up another scheme. Another fun wipe there.
Yeah, just like the old times. Oh, you forget about the gold for a second. You're going to have more money than you ever dreamed of when that first Zeppelin takes off. Why do I always believe in you? Hey, John, you're lucky I didn't invest in that ridiculous automobile idea. Yeah, that's going to make a lot of money.
the shot of the Statue of Liberty there with the boat going past, it was something that was in the original script. Again, just a great idea that Alan Miles put in there and just gave you a certain feeling of them just setting out into the ocean together. That was great. We wanted to keep that.
What's that?
Doghouse. I'm in the doghouse. Come on, John.
Most of the film was shot in Prague, the majority of it. The only stuff that wasn't shot in Prague was some of the larger, wider London exteriors, of which I'll specify as they come up, and the Calgary stuff, which was basically the Western stuff. Everything else was created in Prague and was not easy to do because Prague really does not look like London. Prague looks like Moscow. It's a more of an onion-roofed central to Eastern European in feel and not really feeling like London.
One emperor to another. My family have been watching over it for 12 generations.
12 generations?
My father and I used to skip stones for...
During this scene, Jackie really felt like he was having a bad performance day. He was really having... in his mind, trouble with the scene, and he was frustrated, and somehow I think it really worked for the scene, because it's some of his best acting in the movie. It's a great performance, and it came off really well. And it was just ironic, because he was just so frustrated and thought he was not doing a good job.
This message inside.
What's it saying?
It's the puzzle box. I don't know how to open yet.
You don't know how to open it. Get a hammer and smash it open so you can see what it says.
A lot of times in the moment of filming, you'll realize that an actor is stuck in a rut or they think they're stuck in a rut. Basically, they bring whatever it is that is going on with them in the day or in the moment to the role. I always find it's my job to try to use that and make that what's special and magical about the moment and find a way to bring it to the scene. And if you can include it in a way and make it work, then it's even more special. You have something that's actually real and actually happening for the performer that becomes part of the scene.
And I hear England is ass soup. A lot of pretty girls.
Ass soup line was a great one. London. Now that you can see the Thames is bent there like a big snake, and it is not in real life. Take a look at our historical inaccuracies section on the DVD, which I hope we will have because there are tons of them. I'm sure everyone in England wants to kill me. The roof of that tilt-down that you just saw also in this shot of the House of Lords, the entire roof is special effects. It's tiled still photographs. The set on the bottom part is real.
Fellow lords, I'm afraid I bring disturbing news from the Orient.
Now, I love this moment where you realize the guy you saw in China is actually a lord, and he actually has power in England. It's very important as far as how the stakes are set up for the rest of the film.
China is not well.
Great line. Great line. I love that Alan Miles line. Some insight into the inscrutable. Now, originally in this scene, he brings in a panda bear, which is more Chinese, obviously, and not quite as threatening as a tiger. And we couldn't get a panda bear, basically. I decided I wanted a white tiger, like a Siberian tiger, and we couldn't get one of those either. I think at one point I was even so stupid as to tell him to paint that thing white. And of course, they said, you go paint it white. You want it white. Now, this is the guy's first view of London. I love this. This is real London. This is Greenwich Naval Academy. We added Big Ben in the back with special effects. A little bit of Hitchcock foreshadowing of what's to come. And you hear the kid selling the newspapers with Jack the Ripper on the headline, which is historically accurate, actually. One of our few things that are actually accurate in the movie.
Never heard of it.
This song is our first anachronistic cue in the movie, England Swings by Roger Miller, and it was really great. Somehow it just worked its way in real gently and help introduce that use of music, which is really important because later on we use it a lot, and we wanted somewhere early in the first act to do that.
Hello, ladies.
In Butch Cassidy, George Roy Hill decided to use Raindrops Keep Falling on Your Head. It was one of the first uses, and certainly in a Western, of anachronistic music, and it became a huge moment in cinema history. Cheng Hai Noon did it. I believe they had 3 cues in that movie, and we expanded it even further.
My salmon don't swim upstream the way they're supposed to.
What?
No, I might be shooting blanks. Don't say anything.
Roy, it's okay. Some people are not meant to have a family.
What's that such a special connection with children? Well, ankle biter. Hey! Watch it, you little punk!
Oh, my guess.
Aaron Johnson plays Charlie, the kid here. He was a phenomenal find, and he was the hardest to cast in the entire movie. We really kept looking. At one point, my casting director, Priscilla Johns, in England, who did a wonderful job, thought I had lost my mind and had to call the producers to tell them that I was losing it. And then, of course, in the next meeting, as always happens, when we pushed just that one step harder, she delivered Aaron, and Aaron walked in the door, and I knew it the minute I met him.
Thanks for the tip,
Gav. Hey, I stole that watch from my uncle!
What?
I wanted to make sure that the kid could stand up to Owen, that he could compete with Owen, that they could, you know, spar with each other. All right, we turned the corner there, and now we're in Prague again, by the way. And this whole set was constructed around a couple real buildings and a lot of set in Prague.
Come here, you little rubbish eater! What did I tell you about punching on our turf, Charlie?
I'm on the street now.
I love this true Dickens-looking moment here. These guys. The underbelly of London in the time period.
You're gonna wish you never run away from the workhouse.
Leave the boy alone.
Bloody tourists. Get your nosies out of it.
Guys, do whatever you want to the kid, but that's my watch you're holding.
Well, there's a load of us. And only 2 of you. So piss off!
Easy, fellas. You've lost one war this way. Don't make the same mistake twice.
Now, him taking off the jacket, this is a very, very classic comedy fight thing that Jackie does. He will find something that happens in the beginning of a set piece or a fight, as you were, and something will happen and it will bookend. So at the end of the fight, you'll see the jacket returns again and becomes part of ending the set piece. Now, this set was built to be able to be shot 360 degrees. You can turn in any direction so that we could accommodate Jackie's shooting style, which was something that I just picked up on, actually, before the movie, by watching a making of on the Rush Hour DVD, believe it or not. But Jackie was very, very busy shooting pickups for the Tuxedo, so he did not show up until the day before we started shooting. And part of Jackie's philosophy, there's a fight philosophy for Jackie, and it kind of goes along these lines. Jackie does his own stunts. Everybody knows that. Well, how do we know that? You know that by shooting a lot of wide shots and making sure at some point you see Jackie's face so we know it's him, and everything plays out on Jackie as much as possible. That's part of the shooting philosophy and the philosophy with Jackie, with his fights, and it's what makes it his style and one of the things that makes it so uniquely him. Aside from the comedy, it's just the way you play it visually. I was a big Jackie Chan fan for a long time on my own, and one of the things that I knew on almost all the U.S. films that he had done, no one had really, in my opinion, used Jackie to his fullest. And what that means is really letting these sequences play themselves out in a long, long fight sequence that's really more of a choreography and more of a dance than a fight scene. And I was really committed to arranging our schedule so that we took the time and the extra days to shoot these things out and have these true Jackie Chan, Hong Kong-style fight sequences play out in the movie. Much of the time in the U.S. movies, the fights are truncated and shortened so that you can accommodate keeping the story moving. And I really wanted to make a conscious decision to let the fights be entertainment and let people sit and watch them. And that's very obviously old movie style also. Now, Jackie really wanted to do something with umbrellas, which is a great London-themed prop. There you go, he gets the jacket back, and what else? The hat. Idea that happened on set was Owen to be there and knock out the guy and catch the hat and give it back to him.
I call that one my kung
pao. This is wonderful. That sequence is one of the longest shot sequences in the movie. It took about 8 days. We meet Artie Doyle here, played by Tom Fisher, another actor that was very, very hard to find. Originally, when I read it, I thought of someone much older, and Tom came in and read for the part and just was the first guy to make the dialogue really fly and made it really funny, and it was great.
I'm going to handle it, okay? The English aren't like you.
So likable.
Don't get all emotional, touchy-feely. Do me a favor. Park the kung fu. Let me do the talking.
Come here. Let me give you a hug. I've been after that Fleet Street gang for 2 years. Then you two come along and bring them down in a single afternoon. Brilliant. Now,
Oh, that's my watch.
Yes, a street urchin turned it in.
A little punk better not scuffed it.
I do hope your luck picks up.
What do you mean, my luck?
Well, I deduced from your watch that you'd hit rather a rough patch.
Yes. How do you know?
It's an investigative technique I've developed. I can deduce intimate details about an individual through a close scrutiny of their...
This is great, great idea in the script for Artie to tell us about Roy by looking at the watch, which is obviously completely ridiculous, but really fun.
And a lousy shot. Although he's cheated...
One of the things that I really love that this screenplay did is it really let itself go anywhere it could to get a joke, anywhere it could to get the comedy to play even larger and even bigger. And the movie is really silly. It's a very silly film, and it was fun to work on because it was silly, and we all made a decision early in the movie that we would do anything we could do that seemed reasonable and not completely outrageous to get a laugh. And Owen actually had a little bit of a mantra he would say at times. We will entertain.
I've only read Roy O'Bannon versus the Mummy 5 times. It's fascinating.
Hey, why don't you meet the Shanghai Kid?
Ah, yes. The faithful Chinese...
Alan Miles did a great job tracking some of these jokes in the movie. Some of the jokes like the O'Bannon novels and things like that. It's just great how it keeps coming up, and it's the deputy reads the novels, and here Artie knows of the novels, and later on Rathbone has actually read the novels, and... Then we learn that later on, as I'm sure you've seen the film, that It's Owen that wrote the novels about himself under a pseudonym. Fun idea that Alan Miles wrote into the script with her on the ceiling. Now, I always wanted to do this, one of those moments where people fall in love immediately, completely ridiculous, but the camera pushes in and you have some falling in love music that happens, and there you go, they're in love. Classic Hollywood shorthand. Now, I love this moment because these two immediately get into this, like, brother-sister banter. I'm not a baby. And she plays it so modern. She plays it so aware. It's so fun how she's just like any other late teen girl or early 20s. Yeah, that was a great, great piece of writing with them calling each other's sidekicks. It's great because for one moment you realize that Jackie's character is also thinking of Owen as the sidekick and has been talking about him that way.
It's my duty to find father's killer.
No, it is mine. I'm the one who promised father.
But I'm his only son.
When you abandon us for America, father's dead.
Fan Wong is a pop star in Singapore and much of the Far East, and she had been in a couple of movies there, I think two before this, Hong Kong films. Her first movie won her accolades. We were looking everywhere for someone that could really play this role and could, quite frankly, speak English clearly and was beautiful and had great acting abilities and also could physically do some of the work. And we really went to our wit's end, and when she showed up and I met with her in London, she was fantastic.
Wait. Have you opened Father's box?
Not yet.
She tried to assassinate Lord Rathbone whilst he was taking afternoon tea. He sent in line to the throne, Her Majesty's favourite cousin, and the finest swordsman in England. Of course, the press had a field day. The story actually knocked Jack the Ripper off the front page.
Artie, Lena's not a killer. She's just a really, really, really hot, confused Chinese girl. Maybe if I agree to sign a few autographs and talk...
In this scene, originally, Artie asked Roy to help with the search for Jack the Ripper. And it was a very funny, funny kind of line to follow, and Owen turns him down and says he's too busy and everybody always wants stuff from him and makes himself sound much more important than he really is until he hears he's killing street women. Then he had some line about, I can't believe they're killing sporting ladies. But it started off, opened up a whole can of worms of the audience believing, that's a real London shot, by the way, right there, that Jack Ripper was going to be more substantial in the movie than it was. Donnie Yen. Casting Donnie Yen was a very interesting choice and a really great one. Because if you are familiar with the world of Hong Kong action films, Donnie Yen is a superstar. So the idea of him and Jackie facing off is of the ilk of an Ali Frazier or De Niro Pacino kind of head-to-head moment. So anyone who knows that world knows that there's something coming at the end of the movie with these two guys. If you don't know Donnie, you'll see in the end that he is a fantastic martial artist and he's really cool. And he added a lot to the movie. This shot, by the way, was not really shot in front of Buckingham Palace. You're not able to film there. It's not legal. We shot all the people in the cobblestones in Prague, and then we shot Buckingham Palace live on motion control. It was the first shot of the movie, actually. It was a motion control shot tilting up to Buckingham Palace, and we put the two together.
No, it's okay. Hey, buddy, your shoes are untied.
Now, this is the classic obligatory messing with the guard in front of Buckingham Palace scene, which, when I first read it, I was really unsure of it. And it truly was Owen having so much fun with it, and this piece of music, Winchester Cathedral, that had this quirky tone that really, really pulled it together and made it fun. I should say something quickly about the car that you saw. Now, the car was something that was written into the script. It was really fun because it made Rathbone stand out as someone even more unique and special and wealthy. And designing the car and how it should look, my production designer, Alan Cameron, did many, many sketches, and that was the one we ultimately fell in love with. And it's really cool. It's funny. It's a little bit Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and a little bit You Don't Know What. Of course, it's completely way out of the wrong time period, and we built that car from scratch, the entire car. It's not a make of any old car that ever existed. I love it in this scene when Owen talks about his uncle stealing the watch from Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, have you ever heard of those? They're parents. We have parents that love us. You don't, because you're a little orphan. And go on, you're making us look bad. You're cramping our style. Country blows.
You need a place to stay.
Now here, these two start to develop a rapport, Owen and the kid, and it's funny because even though they really go at each other, you sense a kind of affection because they're a lot alike, and they're both put off by the other and attracted to the other as characters in the same kind of moment.
You just said a lot of chocolate.
Of course I did. You gotta look out for number one, kid. I could really get used to this. Living the life of a country gentleman. Maybe doing a little painting.
This scene was one of those little scenes that was really fun to read, and you just never sure. You think you're going to end up throwing half of it out in the edit, and it just had a certain magic to it. Again, this scene was photographed in the middle of the night, and you can see from the lighting it looks like late afternoon. It's part of our night regimen in the first 8 weeks.
We are wasting time. We must buy Rathbone.
What do you think I've been doing? Sitting here drinking expensive hooch? Boy, refill. I've been working on a plan.
Great performance from Owen in the scene.
Whoa. Don't slosh the brandy. It messes with the bouquet.
Sort of.
Listen, I'm trying to teach you a skill set. Help get you off the street. Bartenders make big bucks.
Roy! The plan.
Thank you, John. Now, I figure if we find the seal, we can prove Rathbone killed your dad.
The film overall was a 72-day shoot, during which I had to make a decision in the beginning of the movie how I was going to achieve these Jackie Chan fight sequences in the way that I wanted to. And obviously, the distinction was that most of the movies that were shooting with him in on an American time schedule were giving him 2 to 3 days to do a fight. And in Hong Kong, when Jackie shoots a fight scene, he has 30 days, sometimes 40 days. It's much less expensive, the crews aren't as big, and, you know, again, they take a little more time and they're much more elaborate. So I wanted to find an in-between. So I had to allot the schedule in a way that ultimately, I believe, became 50-something days of action photography and only 18 days of storytelling. So I made a very clear decision to tell the story in a very simple way, to let the compositions really work for us, to do something like this scene. A wide shot with a little push-in, two singles, and that's the whole scene. And I made a decision to let the actors act on screen and really let the comedy play in a very classic and organic way. And that's what bought us the time to shoot Jackie's fight scenes in a more elaborate fashion. This is a very funny scene that also is in the extended portion of the DVD here where they practice their English accents. The head bobbing was something that Owen came up with in the moment. Again, we weren't sure if it was going to be very funny or how well it would fly, and it ended up scoring really well in the previews.
Don't
No, you're the harness man, which means you get back in the carriage and you wait there in case we need to make a quick getaway. Go on, man your post. You don't want to get what you want.
Again, I love the acting between Roy and Charlie there, Owen and Aaron. It's just really, really real to life, like older brother, younger brother. Richard Bremner is this actor. Fantastic face. Classic, classic English actor. This was a great scene. When you read this in the script, this is when you realized that the script was just extraordinary and was firing on all pistons. Sherlock. He looks over and comes up with Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes.
And Jackie, as always, without any dialogue, always finding a way to put the cap on any joke by giving the perfect reaction. Jackie is truly a master of nonverbal acting. The little head bob of the two of them together was a funny little idea that happened in the moment.
Major General Sherlock Holmes and His Highness the Maharaja of Nevada.
Now these costumes, Anna Shepherd, my costume designer, absolutely fantastic job. And here you're going to start to see the beginning of the true use of color icons with the actors.
The security arrangements this evening, Inspector.
Owen's in blue, Jackie's in green. The costume Jackie's wearing is incredibly painful, actually, to keep the headdress on, and it was something that he was always in pain while he was acting, which was hard to watch, but you can't tell in this performance. These two are great together. Two great British actors working off of each other. This was hands down one of the funniest scenes in the script when you read it.
Looking for that seal.
Okay.
The spotted dick scene. Now, spotted dick, for those of you who don't know what it is just basically a custard dessert, custard-filled, like, cake dessert. And when I saw what it looked like, it doesn't look like that. I felt like we had to do something to tip our hat to the spotted dickness of the joke, and we ended up with that. But it looks more like a round loaf of bread.
Smoky Joe.
This is good. I thought the food here was supposed to suck.
The haggis is fresh from Scotland, sir. It's made from the finest sheep's bladders.
Of course, haggis actually is not shaped like that either, but for the sake of our needs, sausage looked better. I love this reveal. I always try to bring characters into the scene without entrances if I can, and I thought that was a very kind of vampire-ish moment of he just standing there appears out of the ether. Now the choice to have Jackie holding the knife, I love that pause, by the way, of him feeling him out, uncomfortable moment between the two of them. The choice of showing the knife in Jackie's hand was something that we batted back and forth. Malcolm Campbell, who cut the film, did an extraordinary job. And I kept saying, well, do you need to know it's there? Does it help the scene? Is it real tension? It doesn't really get used. Are we going to use it? You know, are we not going to use it? Do we show the audience that? And ultimately, he really decided that we should keep it there. And I'm happy that we did, because it adds an undercurrent to the whole scene where you're wondering if he's actually going to do something, which is nice.
Patience, I'm proud of you, John.
You must find the seal.
That's the first shot of the movie with the two of them right there, looking into the keyhole. Originally, we had a Hall of Armor scene where the guys were hidden inside of suits of armor, and Rathbone walks into the door, and the guards stop, and Hero and Sneeze inside the armor. When they come back, they try to fight them off in the armor, and Jackie's head gets knocked off. But what it did is it created a false start to this set piece, and it ended up slowing the movie down overall, even though it was pretty fun.
We just came in through the only doorway. At least one explanation.
Now here we walk into what's about to become, in a very, very fun way, one of the true winks at Abbott and Costello and Young Frankenstein, literally. As they start looking for the lever that's going to some hidden secret door, Jackie looks over. And it all read like this in the script. It was wonderful. And he sees eyes looking out of the painting. The classic moment.
Roy, the painting!
It's looking at me.
Look!
Oh, yeah, looks like it's looking at me, too. That's great. That's
no, cool. Real eyes!
This moment of ubiquitous gaze or pursuing eyes joke was really funny, because it was something that Owen wanted to know the real terms to talk about them, and James Gammell was our head painter, who painted basically almost everything on all these sets. He was the one that gave us the terms to read, and we just thought they were so funny. Kama Sutra, The Art of Sexual Technique, which I decided to put on the book cover because I realized a lot of people may not know what the Kama Sutra is. Now, the pushing into the breast was in the script was hilarious. That was actually done with a speed ramp camera. Now you see the shape of the box of the imperial, the dragon box that holds the imperial seal. I didn't talk about this in the beginning, but I asked Alan Cameron, the production designer, to design something that wouldn't just look like a box, that we could see it from any angle and we'd know it's that box, because it shows up so many times in the movie.
Damn it, I can't even hear myself.
And that's what he came up with. Now, it's funny, that mm-mm joke between Owen going hmm-hmm and Jackie being muffled was something that Malcolm Campbell created in the edit. It's really fun. Now, we had to do this shot with Jackie. It's just too perfect to not do.
Okay, John.
One of the funny things about the ubiquitous gaze or pursuing eyes jokes coming from Roy is it's really fun how that character, there's a simpleness for him set against these moments of omnipotence that are great. I mean, there's no way in the world he would have access to any sort of language or terminology like that. Now, these guards were supposedly formerly knocked out in the armor hallway. And in comes Lynn to save the day.
She's gonna fight my battles for me.
Come on.
And we return the music again from when they first fell in love. So we use those kinds of... You can create icons orally also that can keep bringing you back to the same feeling. If you also notice, every time you see the Imperial Seal, we have a sound for the seal. We have a sound for the dagger that Rathbone killed the father with. Later comes back, it's Weep's dagger. Now, this was just an absolutely wonderful fight scene. And unfortunately, we just could not keep it in its entirety. And this is the last third of it. You'll see it on in another section on the DVD. You have the full fight. It's just a fantastic fight. One of the things that happens with Jackie, this is the first fight we shot in the movie, is, you know, Jackie showed up a day before. I had created the sliding ladders and the bookshelves that go down and dowels that break over the guy's head. And I had a bunch of ideas. And Jackie comes in and you tell him the ideas. And he may use them or he may not use them. But basically, he will never use them in the way that you thought he would use them. He was supposed to slide on the ladders. Instead, he grabbed it while he was lying on the floor and did that run across the floor. He's supposed to throw a guy into the bookshelves. Instead, he jumps up on the bookshelves and kicks him down on his own. So he always has a way of turning everything and making it signature for him. This is one of the great moments for Jackie. Classic Jackie moment. As far as Jackie goes, because this thing with the vases, originally they were supposed to smash this room to hell. And the first day I walk in and Jackie and I discuss possibilities of what's going to happen in the fight in there, we go through it. The next day Jackie comes to me and he says, "This is the boss's stuff, right?" And I said, yeah. And he says, "Very valuable. And these guys know they work for the boss. They know they shouldn't break it." And I said, "Yeah, that's true." He says, "I should use them to disarm them and create a hot potato game where they have to catch the vases, and that's how he defeats them." And it's a great, great, great example of how Jackie will take the story and put it into the action and use it for the comedy, and how he has full command of all those things that are at his fingertips. Now, as usual with him starting and ending a fight, what he really wanted to do here, and he only thought of this idea 2 days later and the set had already been torn down, was, of course, to have Owen walk in and break all the vases after he's just spent all this time saving them. I always loved him seeing the wind blowing the torch. It's been done a million times, but there's just something adventure movie about it. It's really fun. And we find the secret passage. Something else about Jackie and how he shoots and how he choreographs fight scenes that may be interesting to people is that you end up rotating around the room. As much as we have ideas and we design and choreograph the scenes, he does design them one shot at a time, which means wherever you ended on your cut on your last shot is where you pick up your next angle. So you flip-flop around the room shooting the sequence in order. It is shot in order, shot for shot. And it's very exciting because he improvises with the physicality of it and with the choreography as it's designed. He changes things, he adjusts things. It's also very daunting from a photography execution point of view because it is very, very difficult to keep flopping the lights across the room and relighting every single shot. In normal movie making, you shoot everything in one direction, and then you turn around and shoot the other direction. It saves a lot of time. But one of the great things is, it's like an adrenaline rush. It's really happening in the moment, like a performance.
You have nothing to worry about.
What's funny is that, you know, you have to kind of keep things, as a director, in line, because you may come in one door, and at the end of the scene, eventually you got to leave through that next door, and, you know, if you leave Jackie in a room, he'll keep going around that room in the ceiling and under tables and over tables and under chairs until he's completely exhausted all the possibilities. He's an artist like that. So, as you'll see in the long cut of the fight on the DVD, Jackie passes the point where he can get to those bookshelves a number of times, and each time he passed it, I would say, Jackie, maybe now we throw the guy into the bookshelves, and he would say, oh, not yet, I'm not ready. And it would build and build the fight in that way. Now, this stable scene is a very interesting example of a directorial compromise that I made. It works very nicely. It's done in pans and tilts and locked off camera movements for the most part, except for a few very special moments that I felt needed a little bit of movement. This is a scene I probably, if I had had my wish list, would have directed with the shots, with the camera moving most of the time to keep building the suspense of the fire building and of the jeopardy in this scene. But because of the fact that we didn't have the time, I did it in cuts, in locked off shots. And as I just, here's a little bit of a move right here, just to help that moment. But overall, really done in lock offs, which are a lot faster to shoot. One of the things that I discovered also when I got there, thank God I wasn't spending 2 weeks in this location, because I discovered that I'm allergic to hay. And I was pretty much a mess this entire thing, with my eyes swollen up and my nose running and coughing, and it was pretty miserable.
What in our history together makes you think I'm capable of something like that?
Great moment. Now here comes the first big anachronistic cue in the movie. True rock and roll cue. Now, this entire scene is shot poor man's process, quote-unquote. We really just locked the camera under the hood and just drove around and smashed the car through things and had fun.
You go!
Originally, you saw them crash into the stone, and we really were worried about tipping our hats on this, with the Stonehenge joke that's coming up. So we decided to stay and watch them disappear into the fog and let it become something that you hear happen. And that was a really great choice. There's a longer version of the scene that was really, really great. Now, the first thing that's really important about the scene is the fact that Artie gives you an explanation as to how she escaped. We went back and forth going, do we need to really explain it? How did she end up at the house? She's behind the painting. Aren't we stretching everything a little bit too far here for the audience to believe in it? The plausibility is starting to be pushed. Alan Miles wrote this scene. so that we would have an explanation, and Tom just killed it with his delivery. It just ended up becoming very funny, and the audience laughed at it, and we ended up loving it.
We've got to hand it to the Chinese. They're awfully ingenious lot, aren't they? Does your incompetence know no bounds?
Again, another anachronistic cue. Immediately, the zombies. And this was the first song that we tried. We tried this kind of sitar hip-hop thing once, briefly, on the scene. But we tried this song. This was the first song we tried after that. And the lyrics stuck so well. It was so funny how it just fit into the scene that we ended up sticking with it. We were never able to find anything better.
I don't even know these women.
This scene is obviously a callback to the first film where Owen's having a daydream about women all over him, and he ends up waking up with a vulture biting his ear. So this is really fun, and it's great when you're doing a sequel to be able to have callbacks to those kinds of really great moments that people love and remember. The sheep was a nightmare. Getting it to lick Owen was an absolute nightmare, and it almost took 2 days to get that sheep to lick him.
You okay?
No, I'm not okay. I've just been violated by a barnyard animal.
Who will leave a pile of stones in the middle of that field?
I don't know, John. These people are nuts. Come on. Can I tell you something?
Stonehenge was just so funny in the script when you read it.
Damn adventure we're on, and I'm having an absolute ball.
And this little moment was something that was just so sweet and special, and it doesn't totally fit in the, you know, rhythm of what's going on with them, but it was just so great to have that genuine moment with the two of them that we decided to keep it in. Now here again, conveniently, Lynn shows up to save the day, and normally this is the kind of thing that absolutely drives me bonkers in movies, but you know what? It was done over and over again with the female character falling leaves in the first one, and I felt like, well, hell, I can't think of a better way to do it, so I might as well stick with it.
This is your first time in England, isn't it?
This section of the film was a small section that did not exist in the first draft of the script. First, I wanted to really see Owen hit on her, because I thought it would be a great scene, and the carriage ride back into town was a great opportunity for it to be a romantic setting and to shove Jackie into the back seat and have to watch this thing go on. It was just so there to be done that we did it. But really, we looked at the script and we all talked about it and we said, you know what? The bathtub scene in the first film is such a monster scene. It's such a big scene for the audience. How are we ever going to live up to that? Now, somewhere along the way, Owen was emailing John Glickman, the producer, and ideas were bouncing around. And somewhere along the way, Owen came up with the idea for the movie that we should have a pillow fight with hookers. And it was just so funny and so out of left field, exactly how the bathtub scene was, just completely something that you cannot predict in the film. That we loved it, and we figured, how do we get it into the movie? And that's when the idea for them to spend the night in a bordello and to go in, and I realized very quickly there was a lot of opportunities for character stuff to happen. I was a really, really, really big fan in the first movie of the scene where Jackie overhears Owen calling him a Chinaman, and they're really hurt. It's just a very small, very important character moment that hurts when you watch it, and it creates a real conflict that's not the story, but really a character beat that's really, really solid. I wanted the same thing to happen here and flip it. And it just seemed really great for Jackie to talk to, have witnessed Lynn in the carriage being hit on, to talk to her about Roy and what a bad guy he was, and for Roy to hear it through the door and have the same scene but kind of inverted for them. And that would eventually lead to him having to make up to him, and it would provide an opportunity for the pillow fight, and hence provide the opportunity for her to walk in on the pillow fight, and for there to be conflict between her and Roy. So it just was a great short diversion at the end of the second act. We removed a fight scene in the Tower of London and the Jewel House in London to accommodate the time to do this. And we felt that the audience would really like to take a breather anyways. And as it turned out, it's really a great scene. All these scenes, this whole little section. I love this. We call it the Pink Panther walk. Owen over to the door. It's even funnier the second time.
Hello, love. Fancy a tumble?
Oh, where were you 2 days ago? I would have been.
This is a great little scene.
You're looking at a changed man. I'm sort of saving myself for someone.
And again, it gives us sympathy for him and see that he really cares.
That's the most romantic thing any woman's ever said to
me. And that is one of my favorite lines in the movie. One of the most romantic things any woman's ever said to me. The whole scene is worth it for that one reason. But it really does let you see his intentions, and he really does care about her. He's not just scamming. I love this shot. Owen's physical comedy is amazing.
Our father would talk about.
And now this was a very funny scene. We call back, and we use the salmon joke, and we use this other stuff. Jackie is actually, as much as we gave him the dialogue, he is really improvising the scene in a true way of, like, improvising the performance. Maybe not the lines, but the performance. And it was just something that we had never really seen Jackie do before. He got on a roll, and it was so funny. And, in fact, that's why it's in the outtake reel. There's a moment with it.
Just like him. He has a good heart.
That's right.
Great performance from Owen right here. We came up with the biting the fist like Sonny Corleone from The Godfather when he hears about the sister being beaten up before he goes and beats Polly.
Yeah, sort of. Roy is the type of friend you never introduce to your other friends or bring home to your family. He never.
Owen's disappointment is just fabulous.
Not Roy O'Bannon, Roy O'Baloney.
The Royal Baloney joke was something that everyone looked at each other and said, there's no way it's going to fly, but we shot it anyways. We didn't have something to call back in the next scene that was clearly enough, a soundbite, and it ended up working great. I love that shot of Owen on the bed.
Roy, there you are. Hi.
Mm-hmm.
You need anything, buddy?
Great acting in this scene by both Jackie and Owen. This was the most edited scene in the film, believe it or not. This scene was very, very difficult to get right, because we knew it had to be short, we knew there was a great tension between them, but we knew we had to be brief, and we knew we had to try to be funny in just a couple little moments. We were always asking ourselves how far was too far, and this was one of the scenes where we found ourselves, we went too far. Hence Jackie putting on the bow and the hat, and only breaking the bottle on his head. He did a couple other things before that, and it led up to this moment. We pulled him out. Now, Owen throwing the bottles, the bottle breaking in his hand here was by accident. You don't use real bottles. You use sugar bottles. They're made out of sugar. And the bottle kept breaking by accident because of his grip on it to throw it, and it was just so funny that we kept it in. Here's the Roy Baloney callback from the scene before. And Jackie apologizing. Great acting. And I don't know a John Wayne. Great, great line.
You're dead to me.
I just want to comment for a moment about the look here. You know, these scenes, the lighting and the production design. Alan Cameron and Adrian Biddle, who did an amazing job under an extreme amount of pressure in this film, were the team that did The Mummy, and I wanted that contemporary period look. So they helped me achieve that.
Who loves you, baby?
All right, the who loves you, baby line was something that was bouncing around in my head for, I don't know, only a few weeks, and I said it on set, and Owen and I started saying it on set, and I was like, where is there a place in the movie for that? And it just showed up, and it was so funny when Jackie actually said it, that it was one of those moments we were really laughing on set every time he did it, and asking ourselves, is it too completely outrageous? But it ended up working great. This montage I love, and was always conceived to be really outrageous and funny, So here's a pillow fight with hookers. And the old guy was something that just happened on the day. That's our first assistant director, Mirek Lux, who thankfully jumped into those long johns and did it at Owen and my bidding and ended up making a very, very funny moment in the movie. And actually, at the test previews, the highest rated scene in the film. Then bouncing up and down here was an idea that I had had for the pillow fight, which is basically the World According to Garp trailer. I wanted that the baby being tossed up and down kind of thing that was in that movie.
Roy?
It was his idea.
John!
Close!
Great physical comedy from these guys with the feathers as they run out. This set was great. This was something that I had done in some music videos before, which was just windows and no set, and lights in the foreground, and fog. And basically, there is no set there. You're just on an empty stage, but it feels like a great English fog type thing. And here you go, Jack the Ripper. Obviously, you saw them come into Whitechapel, and that should have been a little bit of a hint that it was coming. That was a last-minute joke that we put in the edit with her yelling over the edge at him. Ended up working great. And here they get caught.
Who the hell are these guys?
Boxers.
The script had on the front page a description of what the boxers were. When he says boxers. Boxers were warriors from the Boxer Rebellion in China in this time period. And they were committed to driving foreigners out of China.
Don Wang. The man...
And here we walk into the obligatory reveal of the evil plan scene that every movie must have if you have a bad guy. Oh, by the way, one more note on that last scene. Originally in the script, Jackie was the one that fought Jack the Ripper. And there was a fight, and he's the one that knocked him out. And one of the first changes I decided to make when I came onto the film was to change it from Jackie fighting Jack the Ripper to her and give her a real kind of girl power moment.
Where is he?
We don't know. That's the truth. We don't know. What are you doing? Oh, stop. Put her down! Put her down! Put her down!
Oh, what, Mr. O'Bannon? Are you going to kick my ass? I've read all about your ridiculous exploits. I mean...
Owen is amazing in this scene. He really, really is so present and so awake and just right there. You can see it in his eyes. It makes the scene really hum.
Oh, easy. What's with the personal attacks?
Great writing here, Alan Miles. This is one of the last things that ended up changing in the script was adding an exchange between Rathbone and Roy so they had more of a personal tête-à-tête.
Oh, why is it always the head with you people? Hold it! Stop! Hold it! Just hold it!
Now, one of the things that I wanted to point out was the first draft of the script originally, Lynn was in a few scenes, but she wasn't really in the movie the way she is now. And we made a decision to bring her in because she was the obvious point of conflict between them as characters. And we didn't want to not have conflict between them. Now that they've known each other and they've grown to know each other, and you've passed that level of conflict in the first film, how do you keep interest between the two guys? And she was the obvious thing to really become the focus of that. Machine gun, also the wrong time period for the machine gun. But the point being about Lynn was that no matter how big your story is or how elaborate your story is, to keep a very human conflict in the middle of it, and this was like Star Wars. It still breaks down to, in Star Wars, the cheerleader, the football player, and the geek. in this movie, we've got the brother, the sister, and the, you know, the love conflict between Owen wanting to be with her and Jackie knowing the truth about Owen and not wanting him to be with her, and her own rebellion against her own brother.
I need your assurance that you will find Seal.
Don't concern yourself. My men are scouring the city.
You better pray they find...
The scene that's coming up with Jackie and Owen, this first shot was something that sometimes when you read a script the very first time, you end up getting ideas that don't even necessarily seem to make sense, but you just kind of want to do them. The shot after next, the next shot, was just one of those ideas that just came up when I read it, and they were just having this conversation upside down. I just thought there was something really funny about revealing this moment between the two guys. Now, originally, the warehouse dock scene, as this became known, was another very, very big fight, and they were going to shoot them with a machine gun to try to kill them. We were feeling there were too many fights in the film, and being in the warehouse dock, I thought, well, they're right next to water, maybe they're going to, for whatever reason, they're going to drop them in the water, and that's how they're going to get rid of them. And that provided the opportunity, when Jackie escapes, Owen to be dunked in the water. So the dunking idea was something that I came up with that I felt was like much more of a comedy skit than another fight scene, and I thought that was really something that was necessary at this point in the film, so that you don't wear the audience down with too much fighting. And obviously, the natural place for a scene where he's being dunked to be led to is for him to end up dropping in the water and Jackie having to dive in and save him. And resultingly so, as you'll see, about a week before we shot the underwater stuff, I came up with the idea to have them have a conversation in subtitles underwater. This is one of those scenes where Jackie said, I have escaped from more things than you could possibly imagine. How am I going to come up with an interesting way to get off this hook? And I basically said, Jackie, we don't really have time for that, so you're just going to have to get off quickly. And he did. Now this is great, because the music shifts and it lets you know that you're in the middle of something that's fun and not just danger-driven. Now, Owen did all this on his own. He was great, because there are actors that just would kill you if you said, hey, guess what we're doing today at work? You're getting dunked up and down a million times with water going up your nose and into your sinuses and out your ears, and he was great. This was another one of the shots that I thought was really fun. And as far as the two of them hanging upside down, they could only hang upside down for about 2 minutes at a time. And so you really only get two takes, and you got to pull them down and let the blood rush out of their head, you know, for about 20 minutes, and then put them back up again. Now, the tracer fire from the bullets was a choice that you'll see at the end of the movie in the barge fight. The barge fight, when we get to it, I'll tell you more about it, but it was a creative decision in order to make the barge fight more clear to the audience. Not something I necessarily would have done if it didn't have something stylistic with which we were leaning on to make a scene more exciting later on. I love this. This is, again, Alan Miles just firing on all pistons. The Watson Sherlock Holmes outfits. Actually getting that lighting so that you could see the shadows right on the door was really, really difficult. Adrian Biddle did a great job.
Protest this intrusion. Every bobby in London is out scouring the streets for you two.
Have you been drinking?
I always drink when my employment's been terminated.
They fired you?
Lord Rathbone saw to that.
I'm sorry.
Of no consequence. I never wanted to be an inspector in the first place. It was my father's idea.
I always wanted to be a writer.
Yeah. Ardy, we need your help.
Owen had a laughing fit during this scene that day. He could not stop laughing, and it went on, and I think we're going to try to put that into the expanded stuff, too. It's just really funny. It happens sometimes. It's the kid in the back of the class moment. Now, this scene was longer at one point, with them guessing where he came from, and it was really cute, because he smelled the water from the river, and he found chips of bluestone from Stonehenge, and they're like, no, that was us, and it was really fun, but again, pacing of the film, getting into the third act, you just wanted to keep pushing ahead. Now this, when we shot this, it was negative 20 degrees out, without wind chill. It was so, so cold, very early in the first week of shooting. I love the simplicity of Jackie finding the rock and throwing it through the window.
Barnarella's foot up.
Now this is great. Chamber of Horrors, you realize here comes Jackie, and you know you're going to walk into a really fun set piece. I love this shot coming up. This was my real opportunity to look back at Abbott and Costello and really talk about, in a film way, what my influences were. And all in one shot, you come back and the guys are standing there like wax figures, and I actually had Jackie do the counting part from Abbott and Costello. If you've ever seen Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein, there's a scene where the candle slides around on the coffin as Dracula keeps opening the top, and it's really based on that. This was a huge, huge set piece originally. This was the first set we built and the last set we shot in the movie. And it sometimes happens. But there's all kinds of stuff that we had to shorten here just because it was way, way too long. The Stretch Armstrong moment there. It's always fun. But there's a whole scene here that has been taken out where Owen comes in and sees Jesse James and he's says famous American outlaw, and he's wearing everything that Roy O'Bannon wore from the first film, and he's really upset about it. It's really cute. And now here, once again, Jackie doing something that's just absolutely brilliant and very, very poetic and lyrical. The scene opens with the guys as wax figures, and then he uses it to get away. It's fantastic. It's classic, classic, great filmmaking, acting, storytelling. If you notice, Rathbone is one of the figures in the back in this, right there over Owen's shoulder.
Here. Go on. Where is it?
Making the wax figures is extremely expensive. In the old movies, they used to just have real people standing there and holding still. Of course, it can end up using up a lot of time if people keep twitching around and moving. So we actually built all these wax figures, and it was hard. If you notice, Artie's holding his chin there. That's from a missing, omitted part of the scene where he gets knocked out by these guys when he first walks into the museum. Now, here it was important through editing to make it clear that Roy was the one that tosses the seal, that it's really his decision. Jackie's not sure what to do, and Roy makes a decision to throw the seal over. I love just showing the flashlights and implying that the cops are coming.
Kids up.
Now here's their low moment, the low moment of the movie, a low point for the guys where they're stuck and there's no way out.
So what are we going to do? Come on, think. I'm not going to an English prison. With my feathery blonde hair and John's athletic build, he'll try to make us the belle of the ball. Forget it. I'm not going back.
Well, at least we'll get a good view of the fireworks from Scotland Yard.
Fireworks?
Of course, this is again poor man's process. Roller backs outside the windows, painted backgrounds going by, and as such.
They're going to be viewing the spectacle from a balcony overlooking the river.
He's got a machine gun on the barge.
Yes.
again's lost your way?
Kid, tell me you got a way out. Nice move, kid.
Now this is, I love this scene. This is really, I always like this moment where Roy stops competing and makes himself really vulnerable to Charlie.
Guess I'm the fool too.
Well, put her there, fool.
The fool thing was something that Owen really came up with on the moment. Put her there, fool.
Charlie Chaplin.
And the Charlie Chaplin reveal is fantastic and so simple and so smart by Alan Miles. We bounced around with trying to sink clues about him being Charlie Chaplin earlier in the movie. Should we put hat tricks in? Should he have a wall to walk when he's running away at one point? Should we do stuff? But we were really afraid of it being too obvious and too loud and decided to just keep it simple and let it just be a reveal and let it be more about the kid saw Jackie and one of those great flip-flop in time things as if Charlie Chaplin was influenced by seeing Jackie do his thing. I love Donnie's accent in this scene, of his actual, the actual sound of his, the Chinese that he's speaking. It's really cool. One of the things about the wide shots, it was very hard to create the sense of Parliament being on the water and the barges all being together. Obviously, that is a combination of many, many elements. We shot the barges in the water in Prague. We shot Parliament in London and built a CGI 360-degree computer-generated model of it. And the bridge was also shot in Prague. So we added Parliament to all those shots. I love this. Jackie jumps from the bridge 40 feet down onto the deck of the ship. And one of those moments in any other movie, you'd say, oh, come on. But because it's Jackie, you say, oh, come on, with a smile. Here we start to intercut and build the tension of the story between all the different scenes, which is really neat. Fully CGI generated Big Ben right there. Shooting on the river was absolutely painful. We were moving into springtime. We left it as far towards the end of the schedule as we could because it was so cold. It was hard to do stunts in the cold. The other problem is that the warmer it gets, the shorter the nights get. By the time we were shooting, we only had 7 hours of darkness every night, which is really, really hard. Now, that is actually fireworks we blew up over Prague, and we actually did shoot that there and put Parliament into that shot and remove all the cars and modern information. This moment. Jackie appearing, rescuing her. And then, of course, the wonderful thing about this, about her line and delivery that's coming up, is in the middle of everything that's going on, it still boils down to this brother-sister sibling rivalry type moment, and it's small and it's fun and it's good. Now, this was an idea that was come up with at the last minute that was really important because there was a logic gap about, you know, why isn't Wu Chang, Donnie Yen's character, firing the gun already? You know, why was there, isn't everyone dead by the time Jackie has rescued the sister? And the idea of the Queen calling over Rathbone solved that, and it was great because you got to hear her talk to him, got to know her a little bit, got to hear her laugh. It made it seem more personal and put a little bit of stakes into you not wanting her to die. Gemma Jones played Queen Victoria. She's a fantastic, amazing English actress. And she brought so much to the short amount of time that she's on screen. Lin distracts the guards. Another important adjustment to the blocking. Now here the machine gun goes off, you see the tracer fire. This idea of them fighting underneath the bullets was something I came up with a day or two before we shot the scene. It was just going to be, you know, a fight in the tent, and I realized that, you know, with Jackie, the more you can create obstacles and obstructions and interesting story elements for him to work with, the better it'll get. So that shot in particular right there was the idea, was them fighting and rolling around on the floor underneath the machine gun fire. Now, in order to do that, I mean, you could have done it without showing the tracer fire, but it just wouldn't have been as good story-wise. And so we decided to lay in the tracer fire, which is really a modern element into the movie. Now, the fireworks, having the fireworks going off for basically the last 20 minutes of the movie was a big concern at one point, and we really discussed, you know, whether it was smart or not, whether we would wear people out. It was something that, you know, ultimately we decided, with the use of sound design and controlling the way it felt, not having it bearing down and beating the audience, if we were really delicate with it and we just kept it and used it as a cool feel to the scenes, that we thought we could get away with it. And indeed it worked. Please look at the DVD section of this. There's quite an extended fight between Donnie Yen and Jackie out here on the barge deck, which is just fantastic. Again, just for time, it just was too much. I had to do the push-in kung fu shot. Being a kid that loved kung fu after school every day. Real fireworks going off. Some of these other fireworks are real fireworks shot live but put in later. Now, I made a choice here to use the guard from the opening. I came up with this idea that when they jumped this guard, the guards had to stand their ground and their hat would get pulled off. And I wanted it to be a character moment. I don't know if anyone ever picks up on this or not, but obviously it's the guy from the opening that belittles him. It makes it a little bit more special that it's him that Roy jumps over at the end. And I just always love that idea of the hat coming off. Donnie's great in here. It's just so cool, these two guys. And I love how Jackie uses a life preserver. Again, something he came up with in the moment. That was a huge stunt right there. Now it doesn't look like it, but it ain't easy to take that on the face. And then her coming up and saving him, this is great. Just great. Story-wise. Something very satisfying about a big Death Star explosion for him. Wrathbone's getting away. This horse would not rear up. We got it happen once for that shot, and then it would never do it again. So, hence why we don't have a wide shot.
Inspector Doyle, arrest this man.
This was a huge scene. We shot this all in one night. Like 32 setups. This entire location had to be swept in one day. It was pretty hard. But I love the moment of just her telling them to go and them grabbing the swords and throwing the swords to each other. It's really Macho and Hemingway or something. I don't know. And of course,
for old man Wayne.
Owens for old man Wayne. And we just had to do the kiss moment here. Her giving back the lucky playing cards and go with the big orchestrated music and Jackie not believing his eyes. And these two were great together. It was really, really sweet.
Tell Rathbone to be careful.
Roy, let's go.
The two guys run off, swashbuckling. This location was actually, you're going to need a bigger gun. For some reason that seemed to make sense with, you're going to need a bigger boat. We're going to need a bigger boat from Jaws. It was some bizarre non sequitur that seemed to make sense in the moment. Again, that was fully CGI. Now, this set was incredibly difficult to shoot. Huge, huge set. Interior, Big Ben. As is the exterior, by the way.
You go this way, I go that way.
The following sequences took 2 weeks to shoot. This was like the longest, most shot sequence in the movie. this set was built fully stable. It was very hard to get the cameras everywhere. Alan Cameron did a great job designing it. This is the shot, obviously, from Alien. I ripped that off from my mentor, Ridley Scott. And strangely enough, Adrian Biddle was the focus puller on that shot. We used the exact same lens as they did for Sigourney Weaver at the end.
I'm thinking of a title for my new book. Royal Bannerverse, Little Lord Sissy.
This set was so dangerous being up on those gantryways with the camera and the crew that we had to build another smaller set for close-ups of just, that was 5 feet off the ground as opposed to 40 feet off the ground, to just shoot inserts and close-ups and other kinds of stuff. Resultingly, what we were able to do for the fight sequence in order to double our time is we had two stages side by side, and I had monitors running from both stages so I could sit in one stage and do close-ups. And on the other stage, I could use Jackie's double over his shoulder to shoot towards Rathbone and be shooting this stuff. Now, this scene is really amazing, and the sword fight is a little bit more extended. This is probably the scene I'm the most proud of in the whole movie. Jackie and I discussed it and discussed it. Most of Jackie's scenes are shot, his fight scenes are shot on him. You watch him, and that's what the fights are about. Because the storytelling was so important here to show him being beaten, we had to shoot onto Aiden. Now, Aiden had never picked up a sword before the movie. He trained and trained and trained for 2 months, and Jackie really worked with him until we got... That's a fantastic CGI shot, by the way. The whole face of Big Ben is real, but the rest of it is computer generated. This is all Aiden doing this stuff, and it really makes a difference. You believe Rathbone is just an incredible sword fighter. And it was Jackie's idea at the end of this fight to reach a point where he couldn't beat Rathbone. That there was no way he was going to defeat Rathbone. And ultimately he had to choose to almost commit suicide, in essence, by cutting down the rope and taking himself down with Rathbone in the end. He actually outsmarts him and gets him to throw the sword back. Now again, Tim Chow, sound design here. The sword sounds were something we worked a long time on. We just wanted something absolutely unique. Obviously, I had wanted something that felt like swords but had that lightsaber feel in it, you know, with animal growls mixed in and all kinds of stuff. And it's just, the sound design in the scene is phenomenal. Owen is really actually out there. He's like 60 feet high up on that. That flag waving, the CGI work on that flag movement is unbelievable. Matt Johnson, our visual effects guy, was fantastic. This whole sequence, when we get into this back and forth of taking one more try, this was Jackie's idea here. To have the guy keep giving him back the sword. He's so good that he keeps giving him another chance and another chance. And eventually, what's great character-wise is Jackie asks for one more when he realizes he's beaten and he's about to die and he figures out that there's nothing left to do but he can take this guy down with him. He convinces him, he says, one more. Give me one more. To Rathbone. He uses Rathbone's hubris against him to win the battle. And I think that's just great storytelling. It's a great moment.
How disappointing.
Comes up with the idea, says one more. He's amused. He says, come on. And he throws it to him. It's great. I love it. It says, you killed my friend, you killed my father. We had a lot of talks about which one should come first. You killed my father, you killed my friend, you killed my friend, you killed my father. You know, one became more important than the other. Put the important one last. Here everything breaks and they go through the glass. This is a huge stunt. That shot right there, we actually had to do that twice. I love that shot. Little puff as Rathbone hits the ground. It's semi-Roadrunner, but it comes with a different effect. I just love this classic buddy guy moment, them talking 150 feet above the ground. But that stunt, the stuntman that was playing Rathbone, who went through the glass, almost overshot the cardboard boxes that he was supposed to land on and went all the way out of frame. So with all these bloody scratches, this is one of the first shots I thought of when I read the script, the rotating roller coaster shot. And believe it or not, that movement of getting them to those positions was one of the hardest stunts in the movie. Just the physical geography of them orienting their bodies to land like that. There was a lot of bloody noses and elbows in the head and stuff. So the stuntman on that shot overshot the cardboard boxes, and then he comes down and he's, you know, even when you go through that glass, it's safety glass, but it still cut your face up, cuts your hands up. It's really difficult. He's going to be bruised all over the next day, and I had to look at him and say, you got to do it again. And so they had to both go back up there. We had to reload it for 3 hours and put the windows back in and then blast them through again. Hats off to the stunt crew on this film. Now this, we've seen this before. So let's just say we've seen this before. This was in Tomorrow Never Dies. There's something similar to it in Rush Hour 2. But the music is what makes it really fun. We decided not to make it a moment that was about danger, but just this heroic, fun thing of them coming down the flag. Besides, we had to do something to get them down. That was all we had to do. This is great. I love Owen still crying like a baby. It's not even like he's yelling. He's crying like a baby. And sees the queen. He says, howdy. We had a take where she said howdy back. It was really cute, but... Good edit. That's a Roger Birnbaum edit there. Nice cut, Raj. The knighting ceremony. This was great. Really special. Again, Gemma just holding it down and making it really, really unique and special and seem meaningful. Love that moment. There's just still a couple of goofballs in the midst of it all. We discover that he is Arthur Conan Doyle, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Great reveal. And they turn around. Yes, I'm a Star Wars kid. I have my influences too. Oh, I love her reaction there. It's so contemporary feeling. I love that. She's just proud, and it's really, really sweet. Of course, we couldn't help ourselves with the Who Loves You Baby callback. Now, a lot of people here like to say, how did they get the seal back? Well, they defeated the bad guy and they went in his house and they got the seal back. That's how. Artie and them saying goodbye here and about him going back to China. This is wonderful. I love. Now, this Sherlock Holmes payoff is just, again, Alan Miles doing a fantastic job, the writers, in tracking a joke from the very beginning, seeing it through, setting it up, and delivering on it. Just, this is great screenwriting. And Owen creating the pause. I'd be insulted if you didn't. That's so great. Great, the hug, callback. Artie's the warm Englishman. And then I love this. This is another callback. You know, it's a terrible cowboy name. It's a terrible name for a detective. It's a callback from the first movie. You know, you reach this point in the film and you want to get out quick. You want to end the movie quickly. You want to let people go, but you also want to pay everything off. Now, them fighting over this like a couple of kids and breaking the box was just a great idea. Because it was like, does he figure out how to open it? Does he smash it with the hammer? No, we decided in the classic kind of buddy comedy way they should be fighting over it and break it open. Is a great payoff. Again, I hate to keep saying this about the writing, but him reading, I always wanted you to cast your own stone, and going back to Jackie's moment on the boat when he first talks about his father to Roy, and he says to him, I remember we used to throw stones in the moat and talk about the day I would follow in his footsteps. Just really good writing, how it comes back. The House of O'Bannon thing comes back. Just everything getting wrapped up.
Told you the House of O'Bannon will prevail.
They get into the carriage.
John, I got a business
And this is really, really funny. And we didn't know if this was too far, but it was too good to not go too far on with the whole going to Hollywood. Obviously, they're like 20 years too early. But it was just great. The idea of them going to Hollywood, John Wayne movie star, people dying for a good action picture, all this stuff is just fantastic.
John Wayne movie star?
Now, the Chaplin smudge, we shot it with it and without it. It was, again, you had to do it. And this shot was shot almost at nighttime. We were really running out of time. It was the last shot of the movie. We are in real London. We removed all kinds of modern buildings. And I always wanted to end on this crane shot that goes back to Big Ben. I wanted to create this impression that they've gone through the country and destroyed the whole thing. And here they are fixing it as they leave. And, of course, you have that bloody tourist line that I threw in there at the last second. And, yes, that's Tim Chow, our sound designer, doing that line. The outtakes. Here we are. Outtakes are a huge thing in every Jackie Chan film. Everybody knows that. There was a lot of pressure always to have good outtakes, but they all have to happen for real. And here's Jackie yelling at me, why am I staring at the monitor? But I had walking pneumonia and was being... I would walk onto set every day and they would inject me with B12 with a needle in my butt, and that's how I survived the night shoots. But these outtakes are great. We ended up with tons of outtakes. We'll hopefully put more of them on the DVD extended version.
Jackie.
Of course, there's a million of them forgetting not to call each other Jackie and Owen. I mean, I just did the whole DVD changing them between Roy and Owen and Jackie and John Wang.
John, I think she's the one. I know it's crazy.
This is great.
But she's the one.
Oh, Roy. She's the
babysitter joke. Owen's reaction right here is just incredible.
What? Baby what?
The guy really can't help being funny. He's a funny man.
Not babysitter, baby sister.
A lot of fun. Day one. Jackie's already breaking with sets. Yeah, a lot of times Jackie sometimes comes in and we haven't necessarily prepared for him to be doing stuff. Such as this, by the way, in the Covent Garden sequence. That was his idea, and here's this funny improvisation moment with Jackie again. But him jumping on the roof of that thing was something that happened as we were scouting it, and he climbs up there and starts doing it, and everyone's terrified, thinking he's going to tear through, and lo and behold, later on he did.
You know, because you're a little orphan.
Here's Owen cracking up at his own jokes. This happened a lot. Owen cracks himself up a lot. We could have had a whole outtake reel of this. He says, it's so mean. It's you. Doing that. It's so funny. And this was great. We ended up using this in the teaser on TV. It's just so good. Jackie always says it's not the big stunts that end up really hurting you. It's always elbows and fists and doorknobs that catch you and that kind of stuff that ends up really hurting. Now, this horse really did bite him hard. We have a thing where we don't embellish the sound effects on these, but I almost wanted to with that horse because it just took a bite out of him. That was a big drop. That one hurt. That one didn't hurt. That was just funny. And oh yeah, here it is. This is the whole thing about Owen in the street sporting ladies. He's killing your sporting ladies.
Who did that?
His cell phone actually went off.
Me? That's right. That was the
first time.
On the scene.
Sorry.
Hurry up! Are you crazy? I can't do that. This isn't Chinatown. I can't sail through the air. I'm not gonna.
One of the funniest lines in the movie, right there. I can't just sail through the air like this is Chinatown, whatever that means. It's like, what does that mean, Owen? I love it. But it's funny.
My eyes are on fire.
The most challenging part of making this specific film was completing the production schedule. It was a very, very tight schedule for a movie of this size. It required incredible logistics. Shooting in Prague was very, very difficult. Shooting in other countries, you generally, because you have a second crew that's speaking another language, there needs to be a translation, and then stuff trickles down to the people that it needs to be expressed to. As you move, every time you move the camera, move a light, or do anything, makes it very, very difficult. You end up losing about 2 shots a day. So over the course of a movie that takes 72 days to shoot, you're losing 150 shots in your film. So you have to be very smart about how you organize your time, how you allot your time, and about how much you can really get done. The food in Prague was pretty horrendous. People used to ask me, what's the food like? I'd say, you can eat just about anything you can kill with a musket. It just was very, very difficult. I lost 36 pounds over the course of production. I know everybody lost a lot of weight, and it was just because you'd walk over to the craft service table, and they're just, you know, they were like cucumbers with butter on them and weird stuff like that. It added to the sense of it being a very difficult shoot. My experience in commercials and music videos, and having done one other movie, although it was a very small film, really served me well in this, making this movie. I've done commercials with this productions close to this scale, but I had never done a movie with stars at this level. And it was a great training ground. I learned a lot through that process. But this was definitely a good step up. Although it was very comfortable for me, it felt pretty familiar. And at the base, it was really about telling a great story and creating moments every day where the magic happens between the actors. These movies are really about these two guys and spending time with them. Pretty much the way we designed the shoot, because we just didn't have a lot of time to do everything we needed to do, is we would shoot 5 days with first unit, Jackie and I, and then we would work another totally different film unit on the weekends, on Saturday and Sunday. And then when there was stuff that was left over, that other unit would work at the same time, overlapping when we were shooting. And a lot of the time we were shooting at the same location, like in the market fight or on the sword fight. We were like, you know, I would run back and forth between the two on, you know, any given day. But pretty much, with the exception, I believe, of 2 days, Jackie and I worked the entire production schedule straight, which was pretty unusual. Most actors would, there isn't an actor alive that would put up with that, quite frankly. And it just shows you that Jackie's a real mensch and an amazing guy to work with. Just amazing. I have never seen anyone more committed to making great films. So I guess that's it. I have to thank Roger Birnbaum and Gary Barber and John Glickman for doing the movie with me. It was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed the movie. I hope you have fun with all the extras that we're leaving you here on the DVD. And I hope that I thanked everybody and mentioned everyone that I needed to during the course of the film. All right. Peace.